The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
This is Blue Moon. It's the original fan-made Manchester City podcast. Coming up, we've got news and views from City's Week. It's your club, and this is your show.
One hard-fought point against Liverpool and three even harder-fought points against RB Leipzig, and Manchester City are one step nearer to getting the other side of their tricky run of fixtures. Maybe it could have been more from the Premier League game last weekend, but many would have settled for the point beforehand. Maybe it could have been less from the Champions League game in midweek, but City eventually got the job done to win the group. We'll look back over both of those games on today's Blue Moon podcast, plus the hard games keep on coming. Tottenham might have lost three in a row recently, but a game against City is often a tonic for any Hotspur woes they might be suffering. Meanwhile, one of the teams that beat them is the opposition for City's game after that, as Guardiola takes his team to Aston Villa next Wednesday. Previews of both of those games coming up later in the show with podcasters Jack from Rule the Roost and Frankie from All Villa No Filler. Plus, we'll also be attempting to put to bed the idea that the Guardiolaization of football has made things predictable and dull. More on that later on. But first, I'm David Mooney, and joining me for this week's show is, from the Daily Mail, Jack Gawn.
David, how are we?
I'm not bad, thanks. And you took me completely by surprise by not saying hello there.
We've had this before, haven't we?
Yeah.
With hellos.
Yeah,
got to keep... Try and give you a different hello every time, and you are foxed every time.
Yeah, got to keep me on my toes. City fan Chris Higginbottom's with us as well.
Well, no point in introducing me, really, because... After all, as the saying goes, who remembers the second guy on the podcast?
Yeah, I'm glad we got there already. because, I mean, ultimately that was ridiculous, wasn't it? Because as Macca quite rightly pointed out, Jack, everyone remembers the second man on the moon.
I came a bit late to this. I didn't see it for like a day until I looked at Twitter and saw that Buzz Aldrin was trending. Why has this happened? And then got to that, and then got to the sticker. and it was a long day. I didn't get much done.
Indeed. And you know what? We're not going to get much done today because...
It's time for a game of Buzz Aldrin. True or false?
Good Lord.
Possibly the earliest...
Why are we giving no forewarning of this?
Every time.
Possibly the earliest time I've ever done this, but since it was brought up naturally, I thought instead of crowbarring it in later on, we'd do it now. We all know that Buzz Aldrin was the second person on the moon, but let's find out some more about him. This one is a learning opportunity for everybody. Six questions, all of them simply true or false. So you've got a 50-50 chance of being right. I don't expect you to know them. We'll just learn some stuff about Buzz Aldrin. How does that sound?
Well, it sounds like we're doing it.
Well, we are doing it. Come on, mate. Yeah.
It sounds inevitable.
Yeah. So, Higgy, 1 to 6, pick a number.
2.
You couldn't even answer that.
I was told all the questions were 50-50, and then I get six options. Was it six? Five? I don't even know.
Yeah, 1 to 6, six options. But you can't get that one wrong. Maybe you get this one wrong. True or false? Buzz Aldrin says moon dust smells like fireworks.
False.
In fact, it's true. They couldn't smell it on the moon, obviously, but they could smell it when they got back into the lunar lander, and he said it smelled like the air after bonfire night. There you go.
Well,
left him speechless. Jack, over to you. Number one. Okay, Edwin Aldrin legally changed his name to Buzz in the 1980s. True or false?
False. Law of averages.
No, it's true.
It's true. It was 1983, and it was called... Yeah, I know this. I read up about Buzz Aldrin. So I should be doing better than this.
Yeah. Buzz was his nickname as a kid. His sister used to pronounce brother as Buzzer, and Buzz just stuck. So there you go. So another swing and a miss. Chris, over to you. 3, 4, 5, or 6 to go.
6.
Number 6. Okay. Buzz Aldrin is the oldest person to reach the South Pole. True or false?
Oh... Well, it's so ridiculous, it must be true.
It is true. He did it in November 2016, aged 86, oldest person at the South Pole.
Yeah. Well done, Buzz. I thought you were going to switch and go, ha ha, no, it was the North Pole or something.
No, I've not done any of them, don't worry. Jack, over to you.
Four.
Number four, okay. Buzz Aldrin appeared as a guest on America's Got Talent to sing the Frank Sinatra hit Fly Me to the Moon. True or false?
Well, true.
It's not, it's false. However,
are you kidding me?
No, I'm not.
Why has he not done that?
But he did dance
Everything
to that.
Everything else is true. I thought you were just going to ask six true questions.
No. He did dance to that song on Dancing with the Stars, though. So,
no.
Well, yeah. Right, okay. I mean, half a point?
Go on then, half a point.
Don't really know true why. True or false?
Yeah, you're still winning, mate. It's
not like half true, is it? Is that what you say?
I mean, no one's winning here, but go on.
Chris, two to go. You can have question three or question five. Which would you like?
Three.
Three, okay. Buzz Aldrin is actually Canadian. True or false?
Well, see, this is another bone of contention because we were discussing this the other day and apparently he's Canadian. So I googled it and he was born in New Jersey and grew up there. So
is it true or false?
I don't know. How can he, maybe has he been there for ages and become naturalized? I'm going to go against my better judgment here and say he's American. No, he's Canadian. Canadian. Yes, he's Canadian.
Are you fucking mental? He was born in New Jersey. You said that. He's American.
You just literally read out the answer.
I know, but like, this is Nico's fault. He said he was Canadian, and I was like, oh, right. It says here that he's from New Jersey. Are you sure he's Canadian? He didn't answer me, so.
No, he's from New Jersey. He is American. It's false.
Fuck. Do you know what? I'm going to give Nico such a pinch.
Yeah, so Jack, that leaves
you.
You
inside your own head then.
Yeah, I did. Incredible gameplay. Jack, that leaves you with question five. Buzz Aldrin once won a bronze medal for the USA in the pole vault in the 1952 Olympics in Helsinki. True or false?
I don't know.
Do you care?
I'm struggling to, but whichever answer I give, I'm going to sound stupid. I don't know anything about this fella, really. It's not something I've ever read up on. Logic of space is for nerds. True.
I wish it was, but unfortunately, it's false.
A silver medal in the discus.
No, he was a pole vaulter at the West Point Military Academy, but never got to Olympic level.
I mean, obviously it was false, but I mean, if that fact was true and I didn't know it, is that worse than me saying true and it's false?
No. I didn't true, expect anybody to know anything of those questions. It was just a bit of fun. That's all. I like that I've got in both of your heads. Like,
yeah, you've rubbed us both up the wrong way there, David.
Less than 10 minutes in, but here we go.
I have been triggered.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Blue Moon Podcast.
Right, well, let's get on with the actual podcast. For the 2023-24 season, the Blue Moon Podcast is sponsored by Green King Sport, where football is more than a game. Green King Sport's venues are showing every televised City fixture over the course of the season. So instead of turning to the internet for a dodgy stream, get your mates together and get down to your local Green King pub and get closer to the action. This season, Green King has launched the Green King Sport Instagram page, which will be a home to fan content, deals and competitions throughout the season. They've already given away Champions League final tickets and signed shirts, so you don't want to miss out. Drop them a follow on Instagram and you won't just be the first to know about all of this. You'll be helping out the Blue Moon Podcast as well. Let's go back to this week then, because a draw against Liverpool, win over Leipzig just about. Chris, how do you feel about the pair of performances that City have put in this week?
I was disappointed after Liverpool. And I'm still disappointed now. It's still after Liverpool. But Leipzig, I can kind of understand why they were a bit flat and not up for it. And to be honest, being 2-0 down at half-time and winning 3-2 is, from a punter's kind of perspective. It's better to watch than a pedestrian 4-0 in many ways.
Yeah, but possibly could have got more from Liverpool. Is that the feeling?
Yeah, definitely. It never felt enough at 1-0. I think there was little protest over the goal that got disallowed from the very soft challenge on Alisson. And I don't know, there just seemed to be a bit of a lack of kind of vim and vigour generally. I thought it was a bit snide of a Pep to have a go at the fans. It was very cold. It was very hard to kind of get G'd up at that time in the morning. And it provides a vehicle for people to get on the bandwagon about City's fans. I didn't go to the game on Tuesday, but like Glenn Hoddle on the commentary that I was watching was like always like not subtly having a bit of a dig at how the atmosphere could be better. And oh, sometimes you need to, the fans need to be like the 12th man to pick the team up. It's like, well, oh, I'm sorry, Glenda. It's like -6. We're already, qualified. It's hard to get up against, like, you know, you're playing Leipzig for the 16th time in the group stage. It's just a bit much, really.
Yeah.
And with regard to the Liverpool game, the Liverpool fans were really, really quiet as well, but nobody seems to have mentioned that.
Hmm. Jack, for the performances and the way the week's gone, after the Leipzig game, Guardiola kind of hinted at complacency in the press conference, because he said if they needed to win, they'd have played better than they did. Is it fair? Is that a thing that is creeping in, do you feel?
Yeah, I thought that was an answer to a terrific question, actually.
who could have asked that one, I wonder?
I don't know. Don Farrell? I don't think it's complacency, because they just don't do that, do they? I think there's too many of them that are playing in sort of 6s out of 10s at the moment, or in Akanji and Diaz's cases, 4 out of 10s, and defending like space cadets. If you'd like to bring it back to the start of the show, thank you very much. We've had this so often over the years, where it's just they have a little blip, and then Christmas time comes and they start winning, and then by March everybody turns around and goes, oh my god, the Premier League's so boring, it's Man City every year, when the same people in like October were saying Arsenal are going to win it, or Liverpool are going to run away with it. I think this is just following a very similar pattern to previous seasons, really. I know that's a really boring answer.
Well, no, it's not, because
like, I think it is complacency, by the way.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, if you can win playing at 7 out of 10, kind of effort wise, then why are you going to be busting your balls and risking injury at trying to put in a gut wrenching, lung busting performance for 90 minutes? And it might have been the back of the mind that they are carrying an injury, or they are aware of, if I get injured, then we truly are screwed. I don't know. It's like psychological. I think it does creep in.
Yeah.
Which is why you need a manager like Pep, really.
And it's not a boring answer, Jack, because there is, like, I do feel differently about this season as a City fan compared to previous seasons, where I'm actually like, I don't think the performances have been great so far. And I think there's been...
Well, I would disagree with that, because I think the performances in the first 8 weeks of the season were absolutely amazing.
Yeah, sorry, I should kind of reevaluate that. I mean, more in the last few weeks. We're talking kind of maybe since the second international break, first international break, there was a period where that period that involved Wolves and Arsenal and that sort of stuff as well. And it kind of feels like Chris is saying, that they are very much in conservative mode, ready to go again after Christmas, sort of thing. And I'm relatively relaxed about it all. Like last season, the way last season started, it felt like, I couldn't put my finger on what was wrong, but certainly before the World Cup, and then even in the couple of months after the World Cup, it got worse after the World Cup. But the first half of the season felt like something wasn't really quite clicking, and I was worried that Arsenal were gonna get too much ground and get away from City. Whereas this year, I feel like the performances may be on a par with the first half of last season, but still, I'm quite relaxed about how it'll go after Christmas, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, the big, I know we'll probably go on to talk about him later in the show, but they've not got the best player. He's not the best player all season. Mm. And you know, look at the amount of runs that Haaland makes that they just don't. They either don't see him or don't want to play the ball because they think it's too risky. And even that Liverpool game last weekend, like, must have been three or four times when he was making a proper dart in between the centre halves. Just needed a ball, in, you know, over the top or between the centre half and a full back, which De Bruyne would give, and none of them are playing it. And you put someone of De Bruyne's quality back in that team, and then
bang, bang, bang. Yeah,
yeah, they might miss the same amount of chances, but they're creating double the amount, so therefore they go and win that game 3-1.
Yeah, hard agree on that. Even someone of Bernardo's quality in the same position looks up and is kind of reticent to risk the pass that would be second nature to De Bruyne.
Yeah. And Alvarez, as good as Alvarez is, he doesn't see the big picture. Like, I mean, no one does, do they? And that's sort of my point. It's just he's that good that, and I guess that would be frustrating for you guys as supporters that, you know, if De Bruyne was missing out of a Liverpool team or a Man United team, people would be talking about it all the time, and it'd be used in mitigation for some of the results or performances, but it just never gets a mention with City and De Bruyne missing, I don't think.
They're all convinced that we've got this massive squad to pick from, aren't they? It's like the brainwashing is complete.
Well, that was the thing. Do you remember, David, you might remember this, like that I did something a few years ago about how the squad's too small to win a quadruple.
Yeah.
And Paddy Power ripped the piss out of me all over social media going, this is absolute nonsense. But and it's like, well, they have like 18 players. Like, what are you talking about? Like, surely you've got like eyes and an abacus. It's not that difficult to sort of tot up.
Does anybody have an abacus? I don't have an abacus.
I have a decorative abacus in dining room.
So I am the odd one out here.
I don't really. Like,
oh, right. Oh, fine. Okay. So I'm not the odd one out. I was starting to wonder, like should I...
From Thebes.
Yeah. Should I be heading out to get an abacus? Is that what we're learning there? But no, Jack, you're absolutely right in terms of squad size. And that was a few years ago when the squad was slightly bigger.
Mm. Yeah. And you look at... You know, look at who they've let go in the summer, particularly McAtee and Partman. You go, well, they could have had valuable sort of minutes in the last few weeks. But it's a bit of a balancing act, isn't it? Because obviously, what they were promised was never going to be enough for them. Whereas City probably could have done with them. But what do you do?
Yeah, couldn't give them the minutes that they would want. Mm. Yeah. Just on the chances thing, because Jack mentioned it before, Chris, that with De Bruyne in the team, maybe they would create more and score more, but still miss as many as they do. I'm starting to wonder, like, are you getting worried by the number that they're missing? Because they are still Premier League top scorers, but ultimately they created the chances against Liverpool to put that game to bed and they didn't do it. They were awful in that first half against Leipzig, still created a load of chances that they decided to blaze over the bar. It's almost like a case of a lot of these problems could be solved by just scoring a few of your chances.
Yeah, they should be scoring more. I think, I don't know, maybe complacency is the wrong word. It's like that sort of psychological thing where it's really hard to, it's a really, really bad analogy, so forgive me in advance.
I am so looking forward to this now.
I find it really hard to like revise properly until the exam is like worryingly close. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, there's no pressure like the pressure of a deadline.
Exactly, yeah. And I think that kind of looming deadline pressure kind of sense really hones the senses of them as professionals, as footballers. And they just do seem to, and again, it could be complacent to just rely on that. Complacent to assume that we're just being complacent at the moment and everything'll be fine. Tie myself in complacency knots. But yeah, they should be more clinical. Do I expect them to improve as the season goes on? Yeah, because if we don't, we're screwed. And I kind of believe in the team against the opposition that we've got in that league. We are weaker, but I've said this before, I do think we are weaker. But the teams around us, even though they've strengthened, I don't think they're quite as strong as us. So yeah.
Maybe
on
the
balance,
gap's closed,
I think we'll be okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a narrower distance for them to kind of...
bridge.
Get to. They're in touching distance, but they're not quite there.
Yeah.
Is my hope.
Just on the deadlines thing, Jack, how good are you with deadlines? Are you one of those that's writing right up to the deadline, or are you quite good at getting your copy in early and relaxing afterwards?
It depends what the deadline is. The deadline's on Tuesday night and the match report had to be in on the 80th minute, then I was writing right up to the deadline. But I love all that. I live for that.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing like the adrenaline of a proper deadline. I've got a piece to do on CFG and Postecoglou and stuff and lads at Spurs for Sunday. Like, the deadline for that is like, get it in like Friday at some point.
So you'll keep putting that off. You won't write it till like Friday morning sort of thing. Yeah.
No. Whereas like the ones where it's like, we need 500 words in the next 6 minutes. Like, I love that.
Yeah. I
just thrash my forehead against the
against
the laptop. Yeah.
Yeah. I went to uni with a lad who won't be listening to this as a Bradford fan, but I've never known anyone trusting his own ability to just do something like right up to the deadline. The number of assignments that he didn't start until a couple of hours before the deadline, like, would have me in absolute sweats. But
did he manage it?
He did manage it. Yeah. And he got a better grade than I did. So there we are. Yeah.
I do think it brings out the best.
Yeah, let's talk about City going forward on one flank in particular, because quite often the decision this season has been Doku or Grealish, and we've done that discussion to death. But I specifically want to talk about how Doku's impacted the games this week, because Jack, there was a little bit of a discussion around whether he was player of the match against Liverpool, and some people seemed to say, yeah, it's nailed on, absolutely, and others were just like, how on earth has this come about?
Yeah, that spilled over into the press box as well. I could just let anyone saying he wasn't man of the match on Sunday, like, well, my head fell off. I was like, how can you not give him man of the match? Like, he's brilliant. I think he created four chances. And you look at like the Alvarez chance that should go in. If it goes in, you're like, oh, Doku's gone around the outside of McAllister. He's cut it back. Absolutely game-changing piece of... piece of movement, piece of play. But because it doesn't go in, you're going, oh, well, what else has he done? I just, like...
It doesn't make it any worse or better, does it? The fact that he wasn't finished off.
He spreads the game. He widens the pitch. He's exciting. His end product is better than I was expecting it to be. And has been something that...
Yeah.
He's been working on it for years, the end product.
It's one of those, isn't it? It's better than we were expecting, but worse than it needs to be, if that makes sense.
I don't necessarily think it's worse than it needs to be. I think if you have a winger that's that tricky, that quick, well, that explosive, and have him as a, you know, this end product machine, you're looking at like the best player in the world, aren't you? And he's not that. Like, everyone's got the flaws. And it's to be expected, but I think he contributes enough with the last pass and how he is around the box.
Yeah,
to sort of not be criticised by like quite a decent sized number of people. I just thought it was odd.
Yeah, Chris. Meanwhile, the Leipzig game, he comes on, he absolutely changes it. The second he's on, the game's a different game.
Mm. Gave it the lift it needed. The thing is with Doku is, I think going back to what you're saying there, but still relating to the Leipzig game as well, but more of a general point, like he's definitely he's good enough for our team on, you know, evidence based, and that's why he's getting in. But I think he'll improve as well, and he's a classic winger, isn't he? And they're kind of their own breed. It's like a separate kind of footballer, and it's like you're a duelist, aren't you, in more ways, in more than any of the other positions on the pitch, because it's quite often it's just you against a fullback. And some wingers, they make it their business that their role is to beat their man, and he does that. And it's quite difficult to do that game in, game out, and you have to accept that it won't always work. So the fact that he's mainly able to beat his man. He came up against Reece James, didn't he? And he didn't get found out. It just wasn't his day. I'm sure he could play against Chelsea you know, 10 times, and we might get the better of him 60% of the time, maybe 50, maybe 40. But it's just like, you know what I mean? You got to accept as a winger, I don't care who they are, they're not always going to be winning the battle overall. They might just beat the man once and get a match-winning assist.
In many ways, it's like, as a winger, it's not about winning the war in your individual battle. It's about winning a battle that is good enough for the team to win the war, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but from the winger's point of view, he wants to win that individual battle. And if that doesn't work, then luckily we've got another tactic to throw at in the form of Grealish. But I'm really pleased with Doku. And I think there's enough kind of intelligence there for us to improve him as well.
Mm. Yeah, Jack, you've been to Belgium this week as well. How was that?
Yeah, quick. I went over for just over 24 hours to go and see some people at Anderlecht to talk about him, and I went up to Antwerp where he was raised. So yeah, it was good. It was weird that a day before the trip, I found out that Sam Lee was on the same doing
same
the
flight.
Very same thing at the very same time. So that was pretty awkward, to be honest, but we survived.
Yeah, unfortunate. We all have to put up with him somewhere. Yeah. Let's talk about City at the back, Chris, because do you feel like City are just not? I don't want to say there's a worry with the defence, but there's almost an element of that they can't control games in the way that they used to.
A bit of both. I think it all feeds into each other. I think it's a huge lack of presence and voice on the pitch that ups everyone's concentration levels and communication in the form of Stones and De Bruyne not being there. Diaz and Akanji, the mistakes that they made, I don't know. I've seen them play brilliantly for months on end, game after game. I've seen them be completely like exemplary for the majority of a season, yet I still feel that those mistakes that they made, they always kind of have that in them. It's, I don't know. Akanji took a long while to win me over. When he first came round, I just thought he had a turning circle like the QE2, and he just seemed to switch off. And then he just shut me up by being absolutely mint for like the rest of the year. And yet that mistake, although dozier than I think I would ever expect from him, he's got that level of kind of mistake in him. Does that make sense? I don't know. It's like Diaz, he slides in a bit too much. I've said that the last time I was on, I think. He's got that... he didn't slide in on that occasion, but he has done it. He commits when he shouldn't in a sort of lesser Otamendi.
Well, he committed when he shouldn't for the goal, didn't he, the other night? Definitely.
That's what I mean, yeah. But it wasn't a slide in, but he did commit when he shouldn't. And it's so obvious as well not to do. It's like, that's defending 101. Like, just, you're high up the pitch. There's acres behind you. The guy's rapid. If he beats you, you're going to have to turn around, and he's going to be at full tilt. You're not going to catch him. Just be more sensible with it. Like,
yeah, but if you win the ball, they're not getting out.
Yeah, well, just hold him up. Like, it's percentages, isn't it? He's obviously made the wrong decision. And thankfully, if there is a perfect time to be exposed as, you know, vulnerable and learn from it, then that game was a perfect opportunity to do it. I'd rather they did it now, get bollocked, have a think about it, sit on the naughty step for a while and come out of it knowing that you need to concentrate better. And if you make that mistake again, then you might be lucky to get back in the team. Then, you know, all the better for it.
Yeah. Jack,
it was a good time.
All of the goals, Jack, that City have conceded in the Champions League this season have practically been the same. It's been a ball through the middle or over the top. Somebody's got turned, and then the opposition have broke away, scored. Like, one or two, you can kind of go, that's a nice coincidence. But when it's five times, it feels like a pattern starting there.
Yeah, but then that doesn't really happen in the Premier League, does it? I don't know. Maybe are they defending a slightly higher line in the Champions League, maybe? It seems...
It's just odd, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it seems strange. I mean, you put the two the other night were just like basic defensive mistakes, which were complete howlers. So therefore, probably unfair to lump them in with the rest of the other three goals in the Champions League, just because they were so sort of glaring as individual errors. But yeah, I just be interesting to see what they do now, because Walker started the season like a train, kind of plateaued a little bit. Diaz, this sounds like there's stuff going on off the field. I don't know how much that has impacted his performances in the last few weeks. Akanji, I'm very much with Iggy on Akanji. Like, I just, this is wrong of me, but I look at him and go, you've got a Rick in you. I don't know what it is. It's just, I'm not completely sold on him. Mm. And then you look at it and you go, well, the way Nathan Ake played on Tuesday when he came in, is it now his time to have a bit of a run in the team?
I was going to say this, because you look at where Ake's played lately. It's either been him or Guardiola for left back, and I thought Guardiola was pretty solid in what was a circus of a game on Tuesday night. Is there any difference between keeping Guardiola at left back and putting Ake in the centre?
I'd probably.
Or the other way around, I don't know.
I'd probably play Ake at left back and have Guardiola in the middle. I mean, I feel a bit sorry for Ake because he's always the fall guy. It always feels like there's someone bigger and better to play ahead of him. And then he always sort of finds a way, muscles his way into the starting 11.
Yeah. Although Lee Majors was the fall guy, wasn't he?
Yeah. So I think...
sorry.
Ignoring that, Jack's just going to carry on.
I'm just going to plough on with the earnest football chat, which I can't actually. Just move on.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the final defender to kind of talk about he's not even a defender, I don't think, anymore. Because he's just good everywhere he plays. Is Rico Lewis, Chris? Again on Tuesday night in an absolute circus of a game, just showed a lot of maturity, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, maturity, football intelligence, call it what you want. Tell you what he's really good at, knowing when to go down, you know, of the sort of Didi Haman ilk.
Haman. It's interesting you went for Haman, because I always think of Gareth Barry in that instance.
He knows when to
buy a free kick.
Yeah, but he knows where everything is before he's got the ball. And if he's getting rattled, there's a switch that flicks in his head. That flicks in his head as if to say, like, I'll lose the ball here and we're screwed, but if I go down, I will get the free kick. So that's one way of keeping possession. And he knows when to choose that option. And he absolutely hates himself when he misses a half-decent goal-scoring opportunity as well. You can see him berating himself, the chance that he missed against Leipzig. I can't sing his praises highly enough. There are occasions where, you know, he doesn't get the decision making 100% spot on, and he looks like, I don't know, only a 26-year-old seasoned professional. But yeah, it's hard to really have a go at him for that. He's a wonderful little player, and it's a pleasure to have him and a joy to watch him progress.
Yeah, and finally for the week, Jack. Rodri had possibly one of the worst games I've ever seen Rodri play against Leipzig. Mm. Why was that, do you think? Is there anything other than it's just been one of those games where it's been going mad and he's just not been able to get on it? Or, I mean, it's been a bit of an odd season.
He did get on it. It's just he didn't use the ball at all, did he? I didn't look the other night, actually. I should have looked for his pass completion in the first half. It must have been the lowest.
He gave about five away trying to sweep it out to Bernardo on the wing.
He's getting caught on the ball and everything, wasn't he?
I'm just feeling like, I mean, he got caught on the ball by Salah as well in the Liverpool game. But I'm just feeling like it's been a bit of an old season from him, because like the red card against Forest, that's not a very Rodri thing to do.
Well, he nearly did that in a game recently as well, didn't he? Was it a Liverpool game? I thought he was going to swing for someone and then he stopped himself.
It just doesn't feel like a very him thing. And
are we seeing signs of mental and physical fatigue? He's mentioned it himself in terms of the amount of games he's played. He's not only undroppable because of his form, he's undroppable because of Calvin Phillips' form. And, you know, it's sort of harsh, brutal, but we would be rotating him more if Phillips was trusted. And I would love Phillips to be playing well enough to be trusted and to be that man, but obviously that plane has sailed. So,
yeah, I mean, the other thing is Kovacic as well. Kovacic was brought in to be able to play both positions in centre midfield. And Wolves are such a shambles.
Yeah,
that is he going to play in there again? He's back in training. He's not. I don't think he's.
Oh, right.
He's not been dropped. He's just been unfit.
But we need to be able to afford to rest him, and we need to be able to let Diaz and Akanji know that they're not undroppable by rotating them as well.
Well, so the sort of Akanji in midfield thing is just, you know, it's not for me.
If it's going to happen, it's going to be a very slow burner. It might take out the element of risk as last man, if nothing else.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how that progresses.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
Ad-free episodes are available on Patreon. Sign up at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
For now, we're going to move on. And every now and then you see or hear someone say that they find watching City boring. That's fine. That's their opinion. And obviously our opinions differ. But this week it was suggested in one national newspaper, not Jack's, don't worry, that football in general has become boring. And it's Guardiola's fault. Fewer shots from range, more control of games, and an all-time low for headed goals have been put at the City manager's door. I've been looking into it. Is football really becoming more boring?
Whoever says it, I think they've got this sort of sense of nostalgia of how good football was and how many, you know, amazing bits of skill and stuff that we used to see from years gone by. But realistically, as you look back, it's not really a thing.
That's the former City defender Nader Manua. I asked him about that this week after one newspaper column bemoaned Guardiola's role in a drop in the number of spectacular goals and a rise in teams searching for control of games.
City hadn't had won the things which they'd won in the last few years. It wouldn't have been something that was said because, say, other teams like Liverpool, Arsenal, so on, other sides at the top, they've discovered the formula, and get on this is a wild formula. It's better to have the ball and to score loads of goals and not concede many than it is to not have it and to just rely on one person to try and bail you out.
Let's start right there with the long shots thing. Here's Chris Collinson. He's the football stats guy at BBC Sport.
10 years ago, almost half the shots in the Premier League were from outside the box, 45%. But then so far this season, and it was the same last season, it's 1 in 3. And that's been season on season. And like I said, if we say Guardiola arrived at 2016... in the three seasons before that, it had gone 45% to 43% to 41%. So I think this was happening generally across football, and it was happening at Man City before Guardiola arrived.
Chris explains how clubs use the data available to them, like, for instance, expected goals.
Before XG arrived, we would tally up the number of shots, and people would say, oh, this team had more shots than the other, therefore, you know, they were unlucky. But not all shots are the same. And everybody knows that instinctively. And all that XG has done is put a number on it. Now, there is a danger to like, oh, this, you know, we had a better XG on the day, therefore we should have won. It doesn't really work like that, because at the end of the day, you've got to take your chances. But it is really useful for teams over the long term to see like, okay, we're not winning, but are we at least playing well? Are we getting the chances?
And this can often go against what feels right for fans. Chris supports Sunderland, and this happened to him when he watched them play at Blackburn earlier this season.
You know that moment when like a player sort of runs onto the ball about like 25, 30 yards out, and everybody just goes, shoot. And just instinctively, the voice in my head was like, no, don't shoot. Pass it out wide. Pass it. And I just eye-rolled myself. And obviously, famously, there's the Vincent Kompany goal, where even like Guardiola and Aguero admit that they were screaming at Kompany, you know, no, Vinny, don't shoot kind of thing. So, it, you know, statistically, it was the wrong decision. But at the time, whether it was just the moment and the Roy the Rovers thing, but Kompany was confident he was going to score. And, you know, it ended up making the difference in terms of you winning the title.
Anua, meanwhile, thinks that improvements in how we understand and use data is likely to be guiding this trend for fewer long-range shots.
If players are taking on fewer shots from distance now, then it's going to be stat-driven. If it's stat-driven, this isn't Guardiola, this is Sam Allardyce. So maybe Sam Allardyce is the reason why there are fewer shots getting taken from outside there, because he was somebody who would have his opinion about football but would base it upon statistics. He played a game of football which was designed to be as efficient as possible, and people hated that.
So maybe this change would have happened with or without Guardiola at City. Ahead of the game with Liverpool, I asked Pep if indeed he did instruct his players not to shoot from range because they have a better chance of scoring by working a better opening.
I said to Roddy to score. I to shoot and score, yeah. I was pushing. Yeah. No, their decision in the final third when the ball is there, they're not stupid. So there is a ball there in front of the goal, say, no, shoot. Still happened that. Of course, I had to shoot.
He also told me it was all about the different qualities that his players have.
We don't have Kevin, for example, now. They can do it, or there are Gundo. It was a good runner, so they're in that position. So different type. When Phil pour more inside and dribble his opponent, he shoots. Julian is a player, can do it.
And he says it's down to his players to make the necessary choices in the moment.
I said many times, you overestimate, you give a lot of credit to the managers, what we do in, with the teams, you know? So it belongs to them. And 99% of decisions when belongs to them, not to us. We don't pass one ball. So have an idea to me what you have to do, but at the end, the decision is for them.
The use of data might have changed the game in other areas too. It's not that sexy, but let's talk about corners.
Corners themselves, again, this is a big misconception. They feel like they're quite an exciting thing, and I've yet to see a corner be one that wasn't celebrated by, you know, a fan base as such. For all the time that attackers work on what to do from those set pieces, defenders are doing the same thing. One of the reasons why you play it short is to change the angle and to change the look and draw out the opposition. Because say if you play it short, the other team have to bring out an extra player. And from when that extra player comes out, there has to be an adjustment elsewhere. And then the ball all of a sudden being live forces people to defend in a different way.
And teams possibly do that because of the stats. Opta data suggests around 1 in every 29 corners crossed into the middle results in a goal. That's about 3%. Now, this is a bit of a handbrake turn, so bear with us. It is still a City podcast, but have a listen to this. This is the Notts County manager, Luke Williams.
Okay, right. I'm going to tell you the truth now, okay? We have the most shots on target from corners in EFL. 1 in 4 corners results in a shot on target is the best by a long way. We've actually scored the most goals in the division from corners. But you don't know they're from corners, do you? Because unless we whack it in a box, it's not a corner. Okay? But we take a corner, we pass the ball, until that ball is turned over and we give it away or it goes off the pitch, it's still a corner.
In that clip that's gone viral, he was explaining why Notts County continue to take short corners.
Corners have a very low success rate across football, worldwide. You know, putting the ball into the box. But of course, when somebody runs through the crowd and heads the ball and it smashes into the back of the net, we remember it. We don't remember 50 corners that just got caught by the goalkeeper, hit the side netting, headed away. We just forget. And we also forget that when the ball comes into the pitch immediately and he's passed 5 times and then crossed from the other side, we think it was open play. That it was just a part of the game, but it wasn't. It was from a corner.
And what he said next could easily apply to City as much as it does to Notts County.
When you play against Notts County, one of the issues that you have is that the ball is in play for longer than any other game in the EFL. Some of the defenders, many of the defenders, they love corners because they can have a rest. We take the ball, put it down, immediately pass the ball, and the defender, again, Notts County. Come on, just kick it into the goalkeeper's hands so we can smash it the length of the pitch and break. No, not going to happen, I'm afraid. I'm sorry.
What Williams is talking about there is controlling games and controlling opponents. Maybe that is Guardiola's influence. Here's Chris Collinson again, this time talking about how goalkeepers use the ball.
I think this is one thing that you probably can attribute to Guardiola arriving in the Premier League, because in each of the three seasons before Pep arrived, from 2013 to 2016, goalkeeper passing actually was 51%. Like for all three seasons, it was stable, 51%. In his first two seasons, it went up to 54%. And in every season, without fail, it's gone up. And at the moment, for this season, still early days, it's at 71%.
Chris also explains why goalkeeper pass accuracy has improved.
It coincides, as you'd expect it to, with the percentage of passes that keepers are making into their own half. So again, across the Premier League 10 years ago, it was only one in every three passes was keepers playing it into their own half. Two-thirds of them, they would kick it long, whereas that's flipped this season. It's now two out of every three are being played into their own half. So Guardiola, and especially because it was quite public at the time, the way he came in and just said to Joe Hart, thanks but no thanks, I think that is definitely one of the innovations that Guardiola has brought to the Premier League.
And this all brings us back to what Anua said earlier, that point about it being better to keep possession and create good chances than it is to rely on a moment of magic. If that makes the game predictable and boring, as the critics suggest it does, then why does it cause so many problems for opposing teams?
I think there's a level of fluidity that comes with the way that the game is played, whereby you need certain people in certain areas, and you tend to attack and defend in different ways at times. Maybe you can be playing in what appears to be a 4-3-3, but then you defend in a 4-4-2. And that element of fluidity is the stuff that keeps the opposition guessing, because it's, as I say, it's about making the pitch as big as you can if you're a team that wants to keep possession, because it makes it harder for the opposition to close you down in certain spaces. And when you do that, then the look of it could be anything. There are times, even say for City, where it could be two centre-backs and Edison, and now you've got your two full-backs higher up than say two sixes. The more you can sort of look at football for something that's far more fluid in terms of being in positions that matter the most at the key times, I think that's what's best.
And if Guardiola's football really is so dull, why has each incarnation of his successful teams got such a distinct identity? I asked him what the differences were in each of his versions of City.
The fundamentals are the same. Depends on build-up, and the fundamentals are the same completely. But last season we played mainly the important part of the season with Rodri, John, Gundogan, Kevin, and this season we have just one player. The basis is the midfield, the four players, now you just play one, so you change a little bit. There is some players that need to adjust something, like these four, they will do it blindly, you know? They know exactly what they have to do, they don't need to talk to me, they don't need to be there.
And that brings us right back to the very start. As the last 10.5 minutes have hopefully proved, City's approach to matches is quite interesting and backed up by both how successful it is and what the data suggests. And if you think there's no room for moments of instinctive brilliance in how Guardiola's teams play, then you might want to watch the first 13 seconds of last year's FA Cup final all over again.
Hi, this is David Bernstein, and you're listening to the Blue Moon Podcast.
If you enjoy the show, please give it a rating and a review wherever you get your podcasts.
So that was a look at whether Guardiola has made football boring. Jack, I mean, Guardiola's influence has obviously been felt across the Premier League and across football, because you look at how the game has changed since he arrived. But boring, are you having that?
No, I can understand why neutrals are not like massively bothered about watching City, purely because they think they know what's going to happen. And quite a lot of the time it does happen. And it's not got, you know, you'd look at the Galatasaray United game the other night. It was like, great game, but also crap game.
Yeah.
Like, quality-wise, it was awful, but yeah, it was like quite exciting to watch.
Does it not kind of lead into what you want from football, and what most neutrals want is a chaotic game that nobody can control? And
yeah, that's, I think
and,
any...
and, like and fans of, like, for City fans, we all want City to go out there, control the game, boss it, and win it quite comfortably.
Yeah, fans would want their team to play exactly how City play.
That's it. If it was Liverpool, there wouldn't be such a countrywide furore about it, because there's generally a bit more of a love-in, and there's a lot of resentment with City. For entertaining games, you need mistakes or a lack of quality for it to be absolutely gung-ho and mad to watch, and we don't provide that. I was unbelievably bored of United winning all the time in the 90s, believe me.
Yeah, funny that, isn't it?
I think the season as a whole, Premier League-wide, has been exceptionally boring. Like, everyone's knackered. There's so many injuries. This has been the worst season in recent memory for me. I just not engaged with it whatsoever. Like, the injuries is just stupid. So no one can put out the proper team. And the standard of officiating is it's just an all-time low. It's just like you go into games going, it's just rubbish. I'm just not. Am I the only one that thinks this? Maybe I am.
I've not thought about it, so I don't. It's kind of one of those that I'm reacting to instinctively now, and my gut instinct is to disagree, but I don't really know why.
Regarding the injuries, it is getting to some sort of tipping point where people have been saying it for years that there's too many games, but you are right. I've noticed it myself in terms of every fan you listen to is like, oh, I've got so many injuries. It's like, it's really not, you know, we're the same. We've got like two of our best players out long term and we're being accused of rushing them back. There's too much pressure on them. And the VAR thing is also reaching a bit of a tipping point, isn't it? It's just becoming the most boring, repeated conversation about how shite it is, and it just takes that long. It really is sapping enthusiasm for the game.
But I just think, I think if you add those two things together, so everyone at any point in time has got 5, 6, 7 injuries, so therefore you're not watching the best teams. You add that to just the farcical nature of VAR and the referee as a whole, and you go, well, it's just not very good, is it, as a product?
Yeah, and just before we move on, Chris, I've just seen that Mike Keegan, Jack's colleague at the Mail, is reporting that there's been a date penciled in for the Premier League's charges case against City, a trial expected late autumn next year, with witness statements currently being gathered, and the verdict could be the end of the 24-25 season, so the end of next season. Longer than you were hoping, maybe? I don't know.
I didn't expect it to be anytime soon. I didn't expect the announcement to be anytime soon, to be honest. So it's kind of a surprise that it's come out at all. But I mean, what can you say? Come on, City. Witness statements, though. That's intriguing, isn't it? Witness statement. I saw him send the email at I believe it was Reading at the time. But yeah, it's going to be. What was the date of it again? The trial autumn.
Autumn next year. So in about a year's time.
Right.
Yeah.
That's going to be interesting, isn't it?
In the intervening time, do you feel, I guess, annoyed about kind of like the discourse around it, given that, I mean, the wider football world and anybody who's not a City fan seems to have made their mind up that City are guilty come what may. So let's kind of like just get on with it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, everybody... Social media is so kind of poisonous and all permeating that everybody has an opinion based on like none of the facts. I don't know if City are guilty, and I don't know if they are guilty, how guilty. But the people who think that they are guilty are the same people that think we don't have any fans, or that we've got a squad which provides two first choice players for other teams for our every position. It's just a huge miasma of bullshit that surrounds City, and whether we get off or get found guilty, that will just continue. So, you know, I've said it for a while. I've not really bothered whether they find us guilty or not. It doesn't change my experience. If anything, it will only enhance it. Send us to the second division. What's the worst they can do to us that we've not already experienced? We've had really good experiences on top of all the shit we've had. Are you going to give us some more shit? Well, Pep's already said that if we were to get relegated, that's the most likely scenario for him to stay is if we get relegated. So a big part of me is just, relegate us, bring it on. Yeah. Was it Brer Rabbit who said, He's tricking Mr. Fox, saying, please don't throw me into the briar bush, anywhere but the briar bush. And he lobs him into the briar bush. And he's like, ha ha, I was born and raised in the briar bush. This is where I do my shit. Watch me go now. And then I believe Br'er Rabbit won the league and he won the cup that year.
Yeah, so, fair. Fair point. Yeah, we'll see how that one goes. But for now, it's time to look ahead to the games with Spurs and Villa. Let's bring in Jack from the Rule the Roost podcast. Hi, Jack.
Hello, mate. Good to be back. How you doing?
Not too bad, thanks. We've immediately got a problem because we've now got two Jacks on the programme and we can't see anybody. So we're going to have to work out how we're going to speak to each other without us getting confused. So do you go by any other names?
I don't. I mean, you can just call me Spurs Jack if you want. Does that sound a bit too formal, doesn't it?
It's a bit odd, isn't it? Jack Gorn, do you go by any other names?
No.
No, good. Right, okay. So we'll stick with Spurs Jack and Jack there, shall we? So Spurs Jack, let's start with you. It's been a great start to the season under Postecoglou, but three defeats in a row now. So how's the feeling around what's going on at the moment?
It's weird. It's a really funny limbo at the moment because I think this is one of the most unprecedented injury crisis we've faced as a club in probably my lifetime. Just in the respect that all of the players that we wouldn't want to get injured pretty much have all gotten injured or suspended in the case of Romero and Adoghi as well. So I think what we can be annoyed about is the fact that we haven't had enough cover going into the season, but the results almost feel... You know, does this throw back to what Harry Kane was saying about defeats not being a disaster at Tottenham? And we all got very angry with him. But I don't know if we're that sort of annoyed about Spurs in particular, just annoyed with the situation, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
like I say, it's a weird kind of limbo state.
Yeah, so I mean, because the mood has changed, doesn't it, around the place? It is a much, much more upbeat mood right now.
Big time, big time. Everyone's much more bought into it. I think a lot's been made of the, you know, us losing 4-1 to Chelsea, nine men on the pitch, still playing with a high line. But if you've just gone through 4 years of Mourinho and Conte, honestly, lads, it was a joy to behold. It's just emblematic of what Postecoglou is, the spirit he's brought to the club. I think there's a quote from him talking about one of his previous jobs when he said, you know, there was a game in particular when we were about 3-0 down and they were still playing the way I wanted them to play. And that's when I knew I had them. And that's kind of what we've got in mind here at Spurs, is that there needs to be a wholesale change here. Look, everybody's heard all Spursy this. It's in their DNA. They always bottle it. They always go back into their shell, this, that, and the other. And we had Roy Keane, I'm sure one of your favourite guys.
We love him.
Talking about this the other day, saying, oh, you know, they've just bottled it. They've gone Spurs again. It was just a woeful misreading of the situation. You know, we've got this massive injury crisis, but we're still playing well. We're still putting in good performances. And it's going to take time to undo 4 years of negativity at the club, not just for the players, but for the fan base, for everyone associated with the club. There is a... You know, it feels like there is an actual change taking place for once. So, you know, I think we're just happy to go with it for now.
Yeah. Chris, when you hear kind of like that sort of weight of history stuff from Jack there, are you worried about Spurs given the horrors that they've inflicted on us over the last few years?
I'm always worried about Spurs. Well, not always, just when we're about to play them, really. you know, they always seem to do a number on us, don't they? It's a bit of a hoodoo. And...
A bit.
Losing three on the bounce for me is the worst possible sequence of results for Spurs to have come into our place, because it's just inevitably not going to last forever. And who better to face to turn things around than us, given their recent record against us? I mean, is it that bad? It feels like it's that bad.
It's not great. I mean, last season, the 4-2, the fact that City were 2-0 down and came from behind to win that one at home, and the performance they put in that second half, that was the whole happy flowers thing from Guardiola. Yeah. Has that changed your feeling about it?
Not really, because we seem to have that kind of complacent air that Guardiola had to work so hard to shift at that time. At the moment, it's a real kind of, we're kind of taking it for granted at times that we're gonna boss games and having to be jolted out of that kind of complacent mindset. And yeah, it's a real test. It's very much in the balance this game. I'm not going into it with any good degree of, certainly not overconfidence, not even confidence really.
It's, no confidence whatsoever.
No, the overriding feeling is trepidation, and you know, history bears that out.
You see stats pop up all the time about clubs and players, and you want to know that exact thing about City. There's an answer. Statcity.co.uk. Want to find out all of the players who played alongside club legends like David Silva, Sergio Aguero or Vincent Kompany? Or maybe you'd like to know which team found it hardest to score past Joe Hart. You can find out City's record in every competition, at every stadium, and under every manager. Just go to statcity.co.uk and browse away. That's statcity.co.uk.
Get a dollop of City nostalgia every Monday. Sign up at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
So, Jack, as the non-City fan on the panel this week, and the non-Spurs fan on the panel this week, what's the reading from kind of like the neutral point of view of this game? Because, like, if you look at the way City have been playing recently, and you look at the way Spurs have suffered with injuries, it feels like it should only go one way. But it's dangerous saying that.
Yeah, I think it will only go one way. Not particularly because of Spurs, but I think because of Tuesday night. I think they had a real rocket up the behind on Tuesday night with the way they played first half. And we've seen examples of that over the last few years where there can be a little catalyst. And I sort of expect Sunday to be one of those afternoons where they just go out all guns blazing and try and win the game in the first 15, 20 minutes, because there's been a few things over the last week, really, that sort of lead me down that lane, if you will. The first one being obviously the performance on Tuesday and what Pep said after the game, but also the comments about the fans last week, the Liverpool game. I think if you put those two things together, Sunday could be looking at sort of a ferocious afternoon.
Yeah. How does that make you feel as the visitor, Jack?
We've obviously had this run of results that's not been great. We have played well in patches, and that's been heartening to see. We played some of the best football I've seen us play in quite a long time in the first half against Aston Villa. Yes, I am clutching at straws. But fact remains, I just don't think we got the personnel. Romero's still out. Bissouma will be back, but he's after he got kind of sent off for that ridiculously theatric dive against Luton Town. He's not been kind of the himself that we've seen at the start of the season. Losing Bentancur again after that Matty Cash tackle is catastrophic. Not having James Maddison there as that true kind of creative outlet.
It's going to be. Have you got 11 players here? Just thinking about this.
Well, honestly, we've had to resort in times to playing two fullbacks as our centre backs, Ben Davis and Emerson Royale. Eric Dier is just so unsuited to this system. I was relishing this game. You know, if a few games back before that Chelsea game, before all these injuries came along, there was a bit of a meme amongst Spurs fans of like, Could we Leicester it? Maybe. Could we do it? And I don't think it is quite as ridiculous as maybe some people made out. We had a really good team. We were playing sensational football. We're not in Europe. Mostly one game a week. And our big caveat to this was, as long as we can just keep everyone fit. And then, lo and behold, everybody wasn't fit. We knew we had no depth. And that's where we're at now. I would have looked forward to this game if Spurs had the team of available to them that we saw do a number on United to play really well away at the Emirates, which is never a happy hunting ground for us, to finally beat Liverpool, which caused so much commotion. I don't want to be negative. Spurs fans are very quick to police one another, say, oh, you're just being negative. You're part of the problem. I'm sure most fan bases do this.
I was going to say, been there, done that.
Right. But I just think being as pragmatic as I can going into this game, mate, honestly, I think we're going to get battered. I really do, because Postecoglou is not going to play conservatively. Mm. He just isn't going to. It's not in his DNA. He's warned us of this up front. And people keep saying, yeah, but surely, yeah, going away to the Emirates, surely he's going to play more conservatively against Arteta's men and all this type of stuff. He didn't. And, you know, it paid off for us. Surely when Spurs are down to nine men against Chelsea, they're going to play conservatively. You see with that we didn't. And going away to treble winners Manchester City, he won't be doing that. He'll probably be saying to them, look, you always beat this lot. Why can't you do it this afternoon as well? Who cares if they got Haaland and whoever else? Like, doesn't matter, you know? I copy Pep, so let's do one better than him, you know?
Yeah. Just for City, Jack, do City have selection problems in the sense of there's not really much room to rotate at the moment? They've got two tough games here, Villa and Spurs, and you kind of think the team's going to be pretty much as it is.
Yeah, they haven't really got much wiggle room. I mean, how many times have we spoken about this over the last 8 years that the small squad is by design, but it does pose its problems in, you know, October, November, and the run up to Christmas. If they were really, really sharp and playing their best football, you go, well, it's absolutely no problem. They can just carry on rolling on. But I don't know. There seems to be something not quite clicking at the moment. I can't really put my finger on what it is. But then you've not really got the opportunity to switch things up. And send messages to players that you might want to send. And his only roll of the dice at the moment is Doku or Grealish, or maybe giving Alvarez a rest. I don't know. There's not too much you can do.
Change it up. Yeah.
No.
Yeah, for City, Chris, this feels like a big week because you look at the recent results, you know, lost to Arsenal, drawn with Liverpool and Chelsea. Does it feel important to kind of win one of these big games at the top of the league right now?
Well, not just winning the big games. It just so happens that the last few games have been big, but we've not won. We need to win a game in the league. I mean, we've dropped off a bit, and yes, it is worrying that we're not going toe-to-toe with the bigger teams at the top of the league and winning, because it shows not a lack of intent, but it shows that we're not strong enough to beat these teams at the moment. We're not playing well enough to beat them, because we haven't. So yeah, we need to step up and hopefully make a statement, because these are the, you know, if you don't beat these teams, then they gain confidence as well as you not gaining points, and it can start to drift away.
Yeah, the counter to that, of course, though, is that City are currently a point off the top of the table. And like you look at this stage of the season, is there any criticism in saying, well, just keep it tight, make sure you're within touching distance, and then do your thing after Christmas?
Yeah, absolutely, because hopefully we'll have Stones and De Bruyne back. I don't know how far off either of them really are. There's a real balancing act in terms of, you know, introducing them back and keeping them fit. But yeah, I agree. If we are within a point or two, we know we've got it historically in our locker to kind of psych that one out.
Yeah, but go and do it.
We're still definitely, as Jack said, non-Spurs Jack, catchy title there. there is something not clicking at the moment. We're not at our best. We're definitely not as good as, I don't think we're as good as this team can be, but we're certainly not as good as the team we had last year when firing on all cylinders. Yeah, by any means.
Just looking at Spurs' selection, Jack. Who will it be if Spurs are to cause City problems? Who will it be that do it? I mean, we all know about Son. Is there anybody else available who could cause problems?
Well, yes, Son is the man. Dejan Kulusevski has been working hard. His kind of role at Spurs is kind of a strange one under Ange Postecoglou for such an expansive manager. He's kind of got Kulusevski playing as sort of one of the workhorses, really, in the team. He can always kind of cause problems, but that's going to be more from his toil. It's not going to be really from moments you'd anticipate. Somebody who's really excited, though, since he's come in, is Brennan Johnson. And I was very sceptical about the signing. You know, 55, 60 mil from Nottingham Forest for, you know, this kind of fledgling player who's not really torn up trees, but in this system under Ange Postecoglou, he's looked really exciting. His technique's really nice. He's got a really lovely touch on him. He runs into space very nicely. He's rapid. He's a really exciting player. We haven't seen the best from him yet, I don't think. So I think he's got a big kind of moment in him coming soon at some point. So if it's not him, I mean, another player that's absolutely sensational that we've got on the books is Destiny Adoghi as well. I don't know if you've seen much or heard about him, but he's a player signed for us by Fabio Paratici before he kind of left due to crime reasons. And
the secret ingredient was crime.
Destiny Adoghi, he's sensational. He looks, again, I'm not saying this negatively, but he looks like a player that probably won't be at Spurs for too long. He looks like a City, Real Madrid type player. He looks exactly like the sort of player you lot would sign and have, and everyone would be saying how amazing he is. Yeah. Like, he's brilliant. He's a sensational talent, but he is a fullback. So in terms of who's going to cause you real problems, I think you can't look past Sonny, but like I say, just keep an eye on Brennan Johnson.
Yeah. The other player I wanted to ask about, and it kind of feels it's gone a little bit under the radar, this. How much has Vicario coming in changed the way you play?
Well, massively. I mean, I think it's made us realise, God, Lloris has actually been clapped for years, hasn't he? Like, we've had that thing of like, he's such a statesman of the club, and he's our club captain, and he's a World Cup winner with France, and we'll just overlook these kind of goals he keeps letting in at his near post, and the fact he seemingly can't kick. What the hell does he do in training, this highly paid professional? But
all those same questions we used to ask about Otamendi, and he's won a World Cup as well. So, these things happen.
Yeah, but Vicario coming in, I mean, again, another player we didn't opt for David Raya. We thought he was too expensive. We signed Vicario for, I think, about 17 mil or something like that. Everyone was kicking off about it. Typical Spurs being stingy, all these other sort of anti-Semitic tropes about Daniel Levy. And then, lo and behold, he's actually really good. This sort of data-led acquisition that all those nerds go on about is actually quite good. Because he's been pretty much impeccable. He's been flawless. It's quite astonishing, really. So, long may that one continue.
The data stuff's interesting, because I think that obviously Spurs would have been doing it before Postecoglou came in, but he's taken a lot from the City Football Group in terms of recruitment. Mm. I spoke to his assistant at Yokohama earlier in the week, Peter Klamowski, who it was like talking to Ange himself. Everything was mate and everything was great. It was weird. I asked him if he'd like, can you just tell me what he's like as like a man manager? He was just, I won't do the accent, but he's like, mate, I just miss working with him every day. I was like, bloody hell, this guy must really be something.
Like, but in top boss sort of thing, yeah.
Yeah, but in that, like Peter was saying, that how much sort of they learn from CFG, and how, they were having like weekly or fortnightly phone calls with Brian Marwood and Zoom calls before Zoom calls were a thing. But the biggest thing was the recruitment and how they can whittle down a pool of, I don't know, argument's sake, 500 players, whittle them down to 20 and then whittle it down to 5, like within seconds, because they've got the metrics that they need, because there's a style of play in place that the numbers know what they need for a specific position. And you look at the recruitment in the summer, and obviously it's not all Postecoglou, but you look at it and you go, well, they have actually signed players for his style of play, which is quite a lot. This is obviously from the outside looking in, but quite a lot of Spurs' recruitment in the last 5-6 years seems to have been a bit muddled, whereas this time it seems clearer.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the positivity aside, Jack, we've got the charity bet a bit later on. So let's have your prediction for that. You've already said that you think Spurs are going to get battered. I don't think anybody here, certainly anybody from a City side of things, doesn't think that specifically. But over to you. What will you put on the bet?
Look, I hasten to say once again, I'm not being negative. I just think Postecoglou is not going to bow to anybody. He's going to come to Man City, he's going to make a fist of it, he's going to try his best, but we just don't have the players for it. And I'm sure you'll know when you go kind of try and go toe to toe with Manchester City, unless you've got the tools to do so, you're going to be punished. And I think we will be. I can see it being a good like 5-0 to you. I think this is going to be a real chastening one for Spurs. I do.
I hope you're right in many ways, but I like you, so I hope you're not that right. Jack from Rule the Roost, thank you very much for joining us today.
Cheers, Dave. Thanks a lot, mate. Always a pleasure.
Jack from Rule the Roost there. Now, we'll get the rest of our charity bet predictions shortly, but first let's hear from Frankie Maguire from the All Villa No Filler podcast. I started by asking about their good start to the season.
I'm glad to be on here to actually talk about Villa in a good context for once. things are actually going well at Aston Villa. It's incredible. And to be honest, you know, from the day Unai Emery, or Professor Unai as I call him, when he walked into Villa Park a year ago to replace Steven Gerrard, the best football I've ever seen at Villa, truly. And there's a reason we are where we are in the league. This season, it's a continuation of what we saw kind of towards the end of last season, where we went on a long unbeaten run. Just playing controlled, thoughtful football is how I would describe it. Just outplaying teams, you know, particularly at home, where we've got an amazing record so far this season, won every game. You know, teams that, you know, that are in sort of the lower half of the league, we're tending to just outplay them and win, you know, 3-1, 4-1, 4-0 against Everton. But then, you know, somebody like Brighton who comes along, who were a bit more of a team that are, you know, competing for Europe this season. And we just find out a way to absolutely batter them 6-1 and play in a slightly different style to what we've done against other teams. You know, as a Villa fan, I've not really had this pleasure of seeing such amazing coaching. You know, I wouldn't say Steven Gerrard or Tim Sherwood were two coaches capable of doing what Unai Emery is doing. And it's just been absolutely extraordinary to see. And, you know, of course, it could all come crashing down against Man City. But no, it's a very, very exciting time to be an Aston Villa fan for sure.
Yeah, I was going to say, you said about the league position, fourth in the league. And from, I mean, I've not watched a lot of Villa's games this season, but the one thing I can say from the games that I have watched is it doesn't feel like it's an undeserved position at all. And you look at kind of, you know, a third of the way through the season now. How can this season go for you, do you think?
Yeah, it's, you know, I was with a few Villa fans last night, pretty much the only people I hang out with anymore, is it? And we were sat around talking and it just came up, you know, like, can it be done? Can Champions League be done? And the more you watch Villa, and, you know, you look at the coach we have in Unai Emery and the players we have, it's something we can definitely dream of, I think. I still think in my head that Newcastle will probably get the results they need in a Manchester United, as bad as they're playing. And really, I've watched a lot of their games recently. They've been very poor to watch, but they just have a knack of winning.
They're a terrible football team, mate. And there's only so long you can rely on individual brilliance to win your games. I'm not saying this. We have a phrase in the City fan base, Burton, and I'm not saying this just to Burts, but United are not good. They are. I wouldn't worry about them.
Yeah, they're poor, but I think, kind of, as a, you know, again, as a Villa fan, after decades of United being that team, you know, that always get results and somehow, you know, I just sort of look over the shoulder and think, oh God, can we hold off teams like Man United or Liverpool? And I think if we can, it's yet another step forward for Villa, because we've had under Emery, we've just had so many step forwards and ended so many hoodoos. One of the few hoodoos we still have left is Manchester City. and I'll be honest with you, I'm looking at that game coming up and I still think in my head, in my heart of hearts, I think, I just think you're too good. I don't know how you stop City. But where Villa can go this season, you know, I dare to dream of Champions League. I think it's definitely now a viable prospect, even though December's going to be very, very busy and I might have a different outlook by the end of the month.
Yeah, I was going to ask about the busyness, because how have you found balancing the Conference League alongside the Premier League?
Strangely, those midweek games have actually helped us, I think. Because let's take, for instance, like players like Youri Tielemans and Leon Bailey, two players who have been more squad players this season and have at times, you know, particularly Tielemans, I'd say, they didn't look very confident very early on in the season, kind of looked a bit off the pace or weren't too sharp. And there was just one game against Alkmaar where Bailey and Tielemans were absolutely crucial in the 6-1 win we had. We absolutely battered them and they were both just brilliant performance from the two of them. And was it 6-1 or 4-1? I've completely forgotten the result now. I've had so many big results now this season.
Well, I was going to say that, like, the 6-1 against Brighton, 4-1 against Alkmaar, there's the 3-1 yeah. against Fulham. You've put some goals in this year.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just that, yeah, so I think those midweek games, they've got players up to sharpness, I guess, and particularly squad players who are now coming in looking sharper and making a real difference. And Emery, you know, he's won the Europa League 4 times. He's, you know, he's got Champions League semi-final with Villarreal recently. He's just a manager who clearly knows how to manage with Europe and with the league as well. And at the moment, it actually seems to be benefiting us. That might change as the season progresses if we continue to go far in the Conference League. But at the moment, I think it's actually worked, particularly for players who just aren't getting 90 minutes every single game, but they're getting, you know, the odd 30 minutes here and then starting in Europe and just looking sharper and more confident.
Yeah. Now, City have Spurs before Villa. You've obviously just beaten Spurs, and I watched that game, and that felt like a very much a game of two halves, because I was watching the first half thinking, oh God, I'm worried about Spurs, and then I watched the second half and thought, oh God, I'm worried about Villa. So, yeah. Like, how's this season been in terms of that sort of mentality? Because the team came out a completely different team in that second half.
I think for Villa this season at home, we've looked very, very capable, and there hasn't really been a moment at home where we've looked particularly shaky, other than maybe, you know, after the at the start of a second half at home, we tend to be a little bit slow out the blocks, but then find a way of getting a goal. Away from home, we've been much more, not as convincing, I think. You know, we got the win against Tottenham, won at Chelsea, drew at Wolves, and a hard place to go, and won at Burnley. But we took some batterings as well at Newcastle and Liverpool, and that was where, and lost to Forest as well, where in those first 15 minutes, I think Villa are a team who'd like to control the game. I think we look a bit like a La Liga team at times, which is no surprise given the coaches we have. Calm on the ball, quite measured, good build-up from the back. But I think in those first 15 minutes, if Villa aren't necessarily totally settled, the opposition team can really get at them, particularly away where the crowd's at their back, the high energy. And you saw that again with Tottenham, where it looked like Tottenham could have scored two or three, even although Villa looked like they could have scored a couple as well. And Tottenham's press was absolutely ferocious. It was a bit like, reminded me a bit of like a Bielsa team or something. It was like our two centre mids in Douglas Luiz and Kamara, who were excellent players. But it feels like a couple of occasions this season away, particularly if you can overwhelm them in the middle, Villa really struggle to play out. And, you know, Guardiola is such a brilliant coach. He'll obviously have probably seen that. And I would not be surprised if City try something quite similar at Villa Park next week.
Yeah. Let's talk about Ollie Watkins, because how can we not, given his form over the last, well, I was going to say last few weeks, but it's months and months now. I don't think I've ever been more wrong about a player, Frankie, if I'm honest. Right. When he arrived, and especially under Steven Gerrard, I was like, I'm not having this guy. Yeah. And then, I mean, he's a Fantasy League must pick, because like he's almost guaranteed a goal every game, isn't he?
Yeah. And I think that's it. I think, He's scored double figures every season since he joined Villa. So that's 4 seasons now in a row. But he has had long spells where he's looked unconfident, quite clunky on the ball. His first touch has deserted him. He's gone on a run without goals. But it just feels under Emery that there's been a shift. And he said it himself, where before he was tending to run out wide a lot. Now Emery's saying to him, stay in the middle. His goal tally therefore is going up because he's closer to the goal, he's in more threatening positions, but it just feels like everything has just gone up a level with him. He's not just his kind of ability to score goals, and particularly instinctive goals, but just kind of his hold at play, the way he works with other players. He's always been a very hard working player, but it just feels like his all-round game has improved absolutely massively. And he now kind of looks like England's number two striker. And you know what? He's always had a tendency to score against the bigger teams. I think he's scored a few times against City. And again, it always tends to be like instinctive first-time finishes. So, yeah, he's definitely a threat for Villa, I think. And if I was to think how we might hurt City, it would probably be something like quick ball into Watkins and just a quick first-time finish. That might be the way we can get a goal against City.
Yeah. Is it still Diaby pulling the strings as well behind him?
Yeah, Diaby's been a super signing. He's been slightly not as overwhelming in the last couple of games where he's come off a bit earlier. But I'd sort of put that down more to this was sort of always going to happen where it's, you know, new league, new system. He might just have a slight drop off and the confidence might drop. But at the same time, he always looks very, very, when he gets the ball, he always looks the speed of thought and his ability to work well with the right winger. And then to come deep and lay it off to the centre mid as well, to like a McGinn. His interchange work is absolutely brilliant. And speed of thought, his finishing. He's a very, very intelligent player, Diaby, and been a top signing for us. So yeah, there's certainly more that Villa have in attack that City will have to think about than definitely in previous seasons. There's some real high-quality attackers that Villa have now.
Yeah, you know what, Frankie, I love talking football with you, and like other than this weekend, other than this midweek coming up, I'm really pleased that you're enjoying it for once. You know what I mean? Like, it's been a long time since I've felt this sort of enjoyment properly, so I'm really pleased that you're getting that.
Yeah, it's normally it's quite a dour Brummie accent I'm speaking about Aston Villa. The dark clouds are over me, but no, that's what Unai Emery's done. Honestly, me and fellow Villa fans generally, a lot of the time we look at each other just in stunned disbelief at what we're witnessing. And there's times I go to Villa Park and watch the football and think, this is extraordinary. And, yeah. You know, like I say, we got battered at Newcastle and Liverpool, and City or Arsenal, who we play 3 days after that, could come and do a job on us. But you just kind of feel like even if we do get battered, you just sort of think there's a mentality and a style that Villa have now that they'll come back, and it won't sort of linger and run into like a 5-6 game run of we're going to lose all the time. It's something feels different at Villa at the moment.
Good. Well, I'm glad you're enjoying it. Let's hold off that enjoyment too much for the midweek. But other than that, I'm glad it's going well. Let's get a score prediction for the charity bet coming up. This is a hard one to call, I accept, but when we have guests on, I don't have to do it. So over to you.
So, yeah, we're on an extraordinary number of wins in a row at home. I think it's, God, I've even forgotten myself, whether it's 12 or 13. But I think City might be the team that ends it. Someone's got to do it. And I still have the hoodoo of City over me. I don't think we win. If we do, I'm literally going to be running around the street in absolute unbelief, disbelief. But I'm going to go draw. All right, I'm going to be a draw. I've always predicted City beat us, but I'm going to say 2-2, an entertaining 2-2.
You're listening to the Blue Moon Podcast. You've made it this far, so don't give up now.
That was Frankie Maguire from All Villa, No Filler. Let's talk about the charity bet then. We got close last week to a big win, but sadly Julian Alvarez's winner against Leipzig took away the 2-2 prediction made by Adam Monk on last week's show. 200 quid down the Swanee for that one. Let's try and put that right for this week, though. William Hill is giving us 3 £10 correct score singles. The winnings are going to the Man City Fans Food Bank Support Group. Go and see them outside the Etihad with a donation if you can ahead of the Spurs game. They'll be there between 2 and 4 o'clock on Sunday. They're just under the bridge near Asda, so go and have a look out for them. We've heard from Jack already that he's gone for a 5-0 City win. That's 25-1 and £250 if he's right. Chris, what are you having for this?
As positive I can be is 2-1 City, so I've gone for that.
2-1 City is absolutely fine. It's 17-2 if it comes in, £85 if you're right. And Jack, what are you having?
I'm having 4-1, but I think it might be more.
Okay.
I've put 4-1, so I'll stick with 4-1.
14-1 and 140 quid, if you're right. That brings us to Villa. We heard from Frankie, he's gone for a 2-2 draw, which is 12-1 and £120. Chris, what are you having?
I think it'll be really tight. I'm not willing to bet against us, just because I don't want to jinx it. So I've gone for 2-1 to City in that as well, boringly.
No such thing as jinxes, so don't worry about that. But still, 2-1 to City is 8-1 and 80 quid, if you're right. Jack,
you're very superstitious about that, aren't you?
Jack, you wanted 2-2, and it's gone. So what did you change to in the end?
Well, as you would say, I'm putting a tenner down the Swanee I'm going for 3-3.
3-3. Hey, I tell you what, if it comes in, though, 45-1, 450 quid if you're right. So, yeah, fingers crossed that you are in many ways. Remember, you've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change. And for information on gambling responsibly, take a look at begambleaware.org. We're going to squeeze in one quick listener question before we finish. Get in touch on Twitter at Blue Moon Podcast. You can also email us as well through the website, bluemoonpodcast.com. Ant on Twitter says, how careful does City need to be with John Stones, especially after another injury after coming back this season and his previous injury record? Given the way Diaz and Akanji were against Leipzig, it might be good to get him back, but surely we can't rush him. Jack, he was on the bench for, was it Liverpool? And it was almost like there's no intention to bring him on.
No, Guardiola said after that he's sort of 2 or 3 weeks away and that he'll be introduced into team training a little bit. I thought it was slightly odd that he was on the bench.
So just because we've got nobody else, do you think?
Well, I know, but then if someone physically cannot play, then why even name him?
Very strange.
But he would have been. I guess he would have been around the first team anyway on the day, and so you know whatever. It'll be interesting. Yeah, it'll be very interesting to see how they deal with it. When he gets plagued with these like little muscle problems, as we've seen over the past few years, he just finds it really difficult to get out of it. There were at least a couple of seasons where he had started to come out of a poor run of form and then got himself injured, which I think everyone was quite disappointed with at the time. Obviously, he's a very different player now, but he's obviously worried about it. He's hired his own sort of physio to work with him in conjunction with the club, which suggests to me that he's more mindful of needing to sort of strengthen his muscle more than he has been before.
Yeah, Chris. We've mentioned it already. The idea that City get De Bruyne and Stones back in the new year, sort of thing. But it's one of those where it's like, yeah, they might get him back. They've had Stones back already once this season, and they've lost him again. It's not necessarily something you can rely on. And you look at how important he became to the team last season. You kind of wonder, like, are there a lot of eggs in the John Stones basket?
Well, yeah, and the De Bruyne basket as well. Technically, we've had him back because he was injured at the end of last season, albeit he came back for a few minutes against Burnley. Ant's kind of answered his own question really well when he said, given the way Diaz and Akanji were against Leeds, okay, we've got to have him back, but we can't rush him. Yes, agree. We obviously are treating him with kid gloves. I think maybe he was just on the bench to just have him as a voice, you know, as a presence, because we're missing that much on the pitch in that respect. But you get the feeling with each injury where people are rushed back, is that long-term making them even more vulnerable and even more, it's even more appropriate to be really, really careful. I don't know what more they can do. If they've got an extra physio for him and they're treating it like that, then it tells its own story, really. Mm. We'd be kind of idiots to just be thinking, oh, don't worry, everything's going to be fine, we're going to get De Bruyne and Stones back, because as we know, as we're discussing, it might not turn out like that. So, yeah, fingers crossed, really.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. But that brings us to an end for this week's Blue Moon Podcast. Thank you very much for listening, and thanks also to my guests for this one, Jack Gorn.
Thank you very much, mate.
And Chris Higginbottom.
Thank you very much.
Stay tuned for a clip of this week's Patreon show. I'll be back next week. I'll see you then.
That was the Blue Moon Podcast. Please give the show a rating and a review where you can. And don't forget, you can listen without the ads by signing up to our Patreon. You'll also get an extra episode each Monday. Here's a clip of this week's.
it's got to be the one where Fernandinho pushed Fabregas over the advertising board. it was just so unnecessary. Because I was fuming that day. But it was that De Bruyne open net miss chance in the Chelsea game when we could have gone 2-0 up. We were battering them, and then the game just folded, and then they were 3-1 up. The players' heads went. I actually missed that red card because I was that fuming. I just had to go at about 87 minutes. So I just couldn't take it. But obviously we saw what happened. The Aguero on Luis challenge, they always had it out for each other. He got rightfully sent off for that. You can't really argue with it. It's a two-footed sort of Roman Reigns spear kind of thing.
It's really funny because it's basically a challenge where Aguero's gone, I am going to get a red card. Wow.
It was just assault on it, really. I think that was the best red card or the most atypical red card you're ever going to see. But the fact that the Fernandinho, who I don't think, well, he wasn't the captain at the time, but definitely one of the leaders in the team, just took it upon himself to just shove Fabregas over an advertising board after we were already down to 10. It was just like so unprofessional, but kind of funny at the same time.
You can listen to more of that at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast. And join us again next time for another episode.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.